They're going to use all the shot clock here. Up by four with 37 seconds to play. Rubio comes off a pick, rises and fires for three. Ball game! Ricky Rubio, you are filthy!
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of November. The Jazz take down the Blazers in overtime. Rubio bursts over 20 again. Mitchell incredible. The defense alarmingly great. Lots to talk about. Plus, it's a Facebook Live Thursday edition of the program right here on Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can grab today's show on Android, iTunes. You can tell Google to play it. You can tell Alexa to play it. It's on Spotify as well. So hopefully you find any way to get it. Subscribe and get it daily as we do this each and every day. And Thursdays, we come to you live on Facebook for your interaction and have you involved in the show as well with your questions and your comments about the Jazz. And we've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about as the Jazz put together a tremendous performance last night. Get a big win. They've beat Oklahoma City, Denver, and Portland all at home to start the year. That's pretty good sign, and the defense is just remarkable. Today's show is brought to you by my friends at Grip 6, the belt company. It's like the only time I'm not wearing my Grip 6 belt. I actually am always thinking to myself that I should like take a picture of myself wearing a Grip 6 belt, but then you're taking a picture like at your belt line, and that seems like a risky bad venture, frankly. This camera is way too close to me today. We're going to back this up. I am too old. And it's too early. There, little vanity to start out to the program today. We're trying to reconnect. All sorts of fun things are happening here. Let's get to it. If it doesn't work on Facebook Live, we'll still have the audio version for you. So we always like to start off with the advanced metrics after a game and see where the Jazz were last night. And the pace of play last night was at 98 possessions, which is actually pretty quick for both the Jazz and Blazers. It's faster than I would have anticipated. I don't know if you saw the note yesterday, but the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns, which were this, you know, remarkably fast-paced team, they'd be 24th in the league in pace of play. The pace of play in the league right now is just alarmingly fast. And I would say it's worth trying to figure out what it means. It's such a significant move that there's probably something to be garnered from it. I had a long discussion with Andy Larson yesterday of KSL.com about whether or not offensive rebounds become more important. There was an interesting pregame moment last night in which there was a discussion before the game by Quinn Snyder saying he needed more offensive rebounding, and then Terry Stotts saying that he doesn't believe in offensive rebounding, you've got to get back. I think it has to do with your team makeup, frankly, that Portland can shoot so well that they may not need offensive rebounding, and we need it because we need the extra possessions. But the pace of play in the league right now, medium pace of play, is 100 possessions a game. Last year, the Jazz played about 92. Last year, the median pace of play for the season was about 98. I mean, so this is a pretty big jump. The Jazz last year played 93 possessions a game. This year, the Jazz are playing 97 possessions a game. We're up four. We're still last in the league in pace of play. So last night was a 98 possession game. So that's pretty quick for us, actually. So offensively, our rating was a 103.7. That's pretty, as we've talked about, the offense in the league last year was about 106 for league average. It's down. Right now it's at 104.3 is the league average offensively. So this was we were about offense against a team that's been pretty good defensively. So far, the Blazers' offensive rating, our defensive rating last night, was 95.4. That is incredible. 95.4 4.4. The defense last night by the Jazz was just remarkable. Let's walk through this a little bit. Let's really take a second on this one if we could. So Portland coming into the game, not what the ratings are now, coming into the game last night, Portland's offense was getting 110 points per 100 possession. They got 95 last night. Their effective field goal percentage coming into the game last night was 49.2. It was only 23rd in the league. They got 44.6. They committed 12.6% of their possessions as turnovers. We forced them into turnovers on 14% of their possessions. Their offensive rebounding game was second best in the league at 28.7. They only got 19.6. And they went to the free throw line coming in at a rate of about 0.245 and fourth best in the league. And they were at 21. So in all four factors last night, the Jazz defense kept Portland below their average. And I guess that's what you'd expect because the Jazz are great defensively. But the level by which the Jazz did that is really high-level stuff. From a Jazz offensive standpoint, they got the turnovers underway at 11.7. Portland does not force turnovers. They play a shell defense. They keep you out of areas. They try to force you to score in the mid-range. And so the Jazz did not commit turnovers, which is good because if you commit turnovers against them, it would be really bad. Our defensive rebounding improved to 80%, as we just talked about. But the story of the night, as much as we're going to all – what we're all moved by is watching the ball go through the basket. The story of the night is the Jazz defense and just how remarkable it is. I know when I get to questions, every question is going to be about offense because that's what's reasonable, and I don't know what defensive questions you're supposed to ask unless somebody asks a question about Cleveland, and then it's just a question of are they that – as horrific as they look. But the story of the night last night is the defense. And the story of the season so far is the defense. The Jazz defense is heading toward being number one in the NBA. I'll have to look. Oklahoma City's defense has been great so far this year. Boston's defense has been great this year. But frankly, there's some, at least in the case of Boston, there's some abnormalities that are taking place where teams are shooting. And I'm going to pull it up right now and run some quick Excel on something. The Boston, I believe, has some outlier numbers where teams are shooting at a really low percentage from three. And you as an individual offense can have some numbers that are different than league average because you might be a different offensive team. But traditionally, defense's numbers have a smaller standard deviation off the league norm. So if you have something going on, if the Jazz are the best in the league at defending the rim, they're going to be somewhat close. So the Jazz are at 57% defending the rim right now. That's about what you would expect. The league average is at 62%. There's nothing screwy about that. The Jazz are the third best team in the league defending the paint non-restricted area. That's what they were last year. Nothing screwy there. The Jazz are 27th in the league defending the mid-range, so nothing screwy there. They're the number two team in the league defending the corner three. Their teams are going to start making corner threes against us. But they don't take very many. We allow the fewest in the league. Teams are at 26%. We're the second best team in the league or the best team in the league. Let me look. We are now the fifth best team in the league at denying the corner three at 5.7% of our possessions. So even if that goes up. And teams are about 20th on above the break. Okay, so nothing's too screwy there. Look at Boston. They're 16th in restricted area, nothing strange there. Paint, non-restricted, mid-range. They're the third best defending the mid-range. That'll probably skew. Teams are shooting 31% from three against the Celtics right now. Okay, I bet the Celtics with their length and some things are really, really good defensively, and they're the second best team in the league at denying the three, which leads you to believe that there aren't particularly good looks being had there, but I don't think someone's going to shoot 31% from the season. So that number is going to skew back a little bit and bring their defense a little closer. Oklahoma City's the other one that's great defensively. They're the sixth best team defending the paint. That might be real. The 10th best team mid-range, 14th or 10th best restricted, 14th corner. They're the second best team above the break. Teams are shooting 30%. On above the break threes against the Thunder right now. That's not sustainable. 31% league average is 36. That'll get a little bit closer. And they're not particularly good at keeping people from shooting the three, Oklahoma City. They're 22nd in the league at denying the three. So when that number comes up, their defense moves. Every indicator I have right now is that the Jazz are on the verge of being the number one defense in the NBA, which is pretty cool. The offense is still what the offense is. Let's not, last night was, again, still, I would say, a little bit below average. All right, let's look at our player tracking last night and see what we can learn off open looks, not open looks in last night's game. The big number there has been whenever the Jazz are over 50. Portland got 50 uncontested looks. Lillard was 8 of 20. McCollum just 2 of 11. So a little bit of shots not going in for them last night. They were 16 of 50. We got 52 open looks, which is great, and hit 21, which is probably a little below average. Rubio was 6 of 14 on open looks. Mitchell was 6 of 12. Ingles was just 2 of 7 on open looks last night. Rodney, 7 of his 11 misses were contested. So he had a pretty brutal offensive night last night, going 0 for 11. And then finally, the one we like to look at is shot distribution is the final thing that I always look at and see where everybody got their shots and whether the Jazz. So Portland came in as last in the league in the restricted area in their shooting. And last night in the restricted area, Portland was 15 of 24, so better, and they got a decent amount. They missed the above-the-break three last night, which is Lillard and CJ being off, but they only got four corner threes. We just do not allow teams to get those corner three looks fundamentally in our defense. And we're getting the corner three look because Rudy rolls, and when you take away the Rudy roll, we usually get it. The Blazers are pretty good at taking it away, too. We only had five last night. We went 3 for 5 on those. We were 10 of 24 and above the break threes. A little bit of this game is we talk about make or miss. This looks to me a little bit like the Jazz made. The Jazz made the above the break three, and the Blazers, who usually didn't. And the Jazz were only 11 of 25 in the restricted area. Portland's the number one team in the league defending the restricted area. Today's show, so that's your analytic look. Today's show, and I apologize, it looks like the Facebook's just banging in and out the whole time. Don't know what to tell you about that. Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6 Belts. The guys over Grip 6, it's a Utah company, actually just located in Draper. I would just tell you, I didn't know anything about them. They reached out to me. I started wearing the Grip 6 belt, and it's actually all I wear now. I'm a huge fan. It's a really cool belt because it has no holes. It has no loopy belt flap flapping around. It hooks in on the back side of the belt and just slides in nicely. And then it's cool looking. And it's a cool idea that you can then change your belt strap and your belt kind of what your handle or whatever the official term that Grip 6 uses, that you can then your buckle. But it's not a buckle, so I don't know, what do you want to call it? Like, that's what they call it, buckles, but it's not there's no hole. It just slides right in. It's really cool. $35. The buckles are about $20. The straps are $20. The straps are $15, and you can create your own. You can get one strap for $15, and they get four belt buckles, and they change colors. And I have the brown and the black. I have the really cool carbon fiber, which is a little more expensive. They have a cool honeycomb belt. As I've said numerous times, I like the Stickley, which I'll go get myself at some point to go with my brown belt. I like it a lot. The other thing, they can do some really cool company stuff. So one of the things they can do, they can engrave your company's name or make it a company gift for the holidays over at Grip 6. So I would, that's another possibility on how to get work done. With the promo code LOCK20, you will end up with 20% off. So now that belt's much, much cheaper. This is Grip 6. Go to grip6.com. And it's really, really cool. I'm a fan. It's what I'm wearing. It's a good Christmas gift for everybody. I'll probably do a few of those. They can custom engrave logos and images on the belt as well for companies, which would be unique. So go check it out. They're out in Draper if you want to stop by and see the store. I gave you the wrong exit number last time. It's exit 291, not 289. It's 291 in Draper. And it's grip6.com. All right. One thing we talked about all year long coming into this was whether or not defense, the value of defense and the value of depth. I look at last night as a defense and depth win. Like, that's a defense and depth win. The Jazz have, you know, their defense is incredible. Their offense is, we just may not be very, like, I know we're all going to kind of try to something else. Like, you look at the top five defenses in the NBA right now are Boston, Oklahoma City, Utah, Memphis, and Portland. And you look at the differentials. Boston's plus 10, Oklahoma City's plus 10, Memphis plus 5, Portland's plus 6, and we're plus 3. Like, our offense just may not be enough that even with a great defense, it carries us to extreme heights. But I think we're better than, you know, we're competing. We're beating three other playoff teams, potential Western Conference playoff teams at home. You know, we're in the fight, which is pretty cool, considering, you know, some things didn't go as they're supposed to. I don't know if you saw Gordon Hayward on the Today Show, but he got his Today Show interview today. He cried. Was very emotional about his kids and what it's like for his parents to see him injured. It was actually a side of Gordon I didn't know existed. So it's interesting to see that. Maybe there's something that comes out of this injury that lets him open up that side. So who knows? But depth and defense. Cephalosha is incredible. I don't know what plus minus and what real plus minus can say about his defense, but his length and what he does, he played the four on offense and the one defensively last night. He guarded Lillard, who was on fire for much of that game. It'd be worth going back to rewatch and see at what point in the game he switches over to him, which I'm not entirely sure when it was. I think it might have been the overtime. It also might have been somewhere in the fourth quarter earlier, but Lillard, I thought, just got tired. I just thought that the burden of what you're asking him to do, and then you have a 7'2" wingspan of Cephalosha, I kind of thought halfway through the overtime, he kind of tapped out like, I'm exhausted. And he was great last night. I mean, he carried them in the fourth quarter. Holy smokes, what a fourth quarter did Dame Lillard have last night. Lillard's fourth quarter was 4 of 8 from the field, 13 points. He just picked him up and carried him when CJ wasn't as good last night. But Cephalosha's length and defense is just big. And, you know, he played the final 16 minutes of this game last night. And I think was plus 18 in that time period. He is a game changer of what he can do. I thought Jerebko was very good last night. That's where I'm talking about depth. In fact, I think Jerebko right now, considering where Joe's health was and how he was playing, Jerebko might give this team more for the first 44 minutes of a game. And then, you know, we're going to miss Joe in the final 5 minutes of a game. But there was just a lot of grit and gumption to me last night. A lot of possessions that went wrong. A lot of times in the game where if you don't make a play, the game's over. And I thought the Jazz fought through all those things beautifully last night and really, really did a nice job of showing that, getting through that, and being really pretty awesome. So Rubio is the story everyone's talking about today. Do we have a shooter? Is there something? Did we get something we had no idea about? It's an interesting question. I don't want to poo-poo it, and I don't want to overplay it. And what I mean by that is I do think something's a little different. So it stems back to last year in the second half of the season. He was 10. He's gone over 20 points now in 10 of his last 26 games. This is a guy that just doesn't score 20 points very often in his career. So something changed with him last year in Minnesota. Then you have the fact that Quinn is just letting him play really, really free right now. And you're having a different player that's out there. The pull-up threes, you know, we haven't watched a lot of them, so maybe it's very misleading for me to say that is just something that I didn't know existed in his game. But it's certainly a shot that I'll admit when it goes in right now, I'm a little surprised, but he did it three times the other night. And to me, more than whether it goes in or not, it's the confidence that he has to play with that freedom that he has been given. And it's a freedom I'm not sure that he's ever had before in his career. If you date him back to March 11th of last year, there's 25 games that are played. In that time period, he's averaging 17 points per game. He's shooting 43% from the field, 37% from three, 93% from the free throw line. His assists per game are at 9, which they're a little lower for us. We move the ball in a different way. But so this is a 17-point-a-game scorer over his last 25 games. And, you know, that's with two different teams. It's playing a lot of minutes. And you can probably stretch that back even a little bit further if you want to, because his post-All-Star break numbers are pretty good. I mean, he just kind of clicks in post-All-Star break last year. And so if you take him post-All-Star break, that number 17 drops, but you have a larger game sample and you begin to wonder if there's more to it. He has only scored 20 points in a row in three games once before in his career, and that was March 11th, March 13th, March 15th, and March 17th of last year in Minnesota. So now you suddenly take that, and in a 25-game stretch that we were just talking about, he had a 20-game run four in a row. He had a 20 games back-to-back. He had another 20-point game. He's now got three in a row. So that's 10 of his last 25 games. I said 26. That's accurate, too, but it turned out to be 25 for him. If you take his last 32 games, which is since All-Star break last year, he's averaging 16 points, shooting 43% from the field, 36% from three, 92% from the free throw line, with 5 rebounds and 10 assists a game. His effective field goal percentage is still below league average. It's at 47.5, so it's not as though he's just become a good shooter, but it's not horrendous. It's not, he's no longer a bad shooter, but 47.5 is not great. The free throws are what carries him through to being above average offensive player right there. So that's pretty cool. And jumps out that maybe he is becoming a little bit different. The Jazz have a specific item in his shooting that they're really working on with him. And maybe we'll see as he, you know, as he gets tired and the year goes on, whether that holds or not is a different question. We lost our Facebook live feed, so I don't have the capability of getting through all the questions. I'll try to go to the ones that were asked earlier and get to those as the show goes on. Donovan Mitchell, last three games, 19 points a game, shooting 47%, 45% from three. His effective field goal percentage is a stunning 57%. Let's let this one play out, but that's pretty incredible. What he's doing in his 8 games as a rookie is just incredible. And, you know, he's taking his role is increasing moment by moment. I don't want to get too excited. He played 40 minutes a night as a rookie. I went back to go look at Damian Lillard's rookie year to start, and it blows Donovan Miller's out of the water, just so you know. It's just incredible. Dame opened his career with 23 the first night, 21 the next, 20 the night after that, 13 in Dallas, 16, 20, 12, 22, 27, and good shooting nights almost every night. So, you know, who else, what other rookie has ever done this was one of the questions I got asked, and the answer is a whole lot. But in the opening 8 games of Lillard's career, who I do think there's a comparison to, he averaged 18 points while shooting 43% from the field, 41% from three, and an effective field goal percentage of 51% in his opening 8 games of his career, which Dame just was terrific. And, you know, played 4 years of college, though was only a year older than Donovan. Donovan's not young. Donovan's effective field goal percentage is 41% in comparison to Dame's 51 through the first 8 games of their career. So, you know, we still got stuff there. Like, there's still a lot of work to do, and he's, you know, let's not annoy him yet, and everyone wants to know about rookie of the year, and there's a guy, Ben Simmons, who's coming to town, who, by the way, I've talked to 3 announcers in the league who tell me that Ben Simmons reminds them of Magic Johnson. So please make sure you come out and see Ben Simmons when he's in town on Tuesday, November 7th. Tickets are available. We're home Friday. It's Toronto. That's a good one if you're looking for tickets as well at utahjazz.com. Today's show is also, we'll get to your questions next year on the program. Today's show is also brought to you by The Advocates. And The Advocates are a Utah-based injury attorneys. So if you're in a car accident and you want to make sure that you, one, are going to get good results out of it. Two, that maybe most importantly, nothing bad happens, losing your job, losing a bunch of money, all those kind of things. And three, that you're going to be treated well. Then the Utah Advocates is your answer. Talking to Matt, who is the founder of the Advocates and the lead partner of the Advocates, what he really is proud of that they have done is they have built a system that allows experts to do the things that they need to do along the way, which frees their attorneys to be able to be available for you, the client. They talk to you within 60 seconds of your call into the Advocates. You will have an attorney that reaches out to you, and you will have an attorney that walks you through the whole process. Behind the scenes, what the Advocates will do is they have a 106-step process that walks every single accident through the same process to get you those great results. Accidents are different. Process is the same. They have a process that's efficient. Efficiency means productivity behind the scenes, good communication with you, the client, and expediting the process with the great results. Experts at each individual task inside the process, with the lawyers then doing what they need to do. The fact is that only about 1% of these trials ever, or these instances ever go to trial, and about 3% ever go to arbitration. So you want somebody who's on your side walking you through the process, and that's what the Advocates will do for you. Go to utahadvocates.com when you need your auto, your injury attorney, dealing primarily with auto accidents. All right, let's get to your questions. I know Facebook Live is down, but I still can get the questions. They started off with Taylor. I think Joe Johnson's great. However, his injury, he hasn't played well so far this year. If Jarebko keeps shooting well, could he steal some of Joe's minutes when Joe comes back from injury? I think the original plan was to have Jarebko and Joe Johnson split stretch 4 minutes and have the Jazz playing predominantly as a team that was playing with an open floor and stretch four team. Then Jarebko didn't have a great camp, and Epe Udo did. And Udo's showing great defensive prowess, and so the rotation changed a little bit. This is good for Jarebko because he plays really, really hard, almost to the point of exhaustion. And maybe this is going to be a way for him to show Quinn what he can do, because he hasn't been great, frankly, in practice. I think he knows that. And so this is an opportunity for him, knowing he's going to get a few weeks of time, not feeling he's out there for just a minute, to play. And I think you're going to – I loved the signing. I actually thought that the Jarebko signing of the three, Cephalosha, Jarebko, and Udo were that – I thought that Jarebko would be the one that at the end of the year we look back at as the most influential. Turns out I think I'm going to be wrong on that, because Cephalosha is just so good and does so many things. And I would love to play with him. I said that last night on the broadcast. Just would love to play with him. By the way, speaking of the broadcast, Jazz Game Rewind done by Kylie last night's really, really good. So if you missed the game, go grab Jazz Game Rewind. It's available for you at 1280thezone.com. We also have the Utah Jazz radio feed, and that's done as well. How much of Rubio's shooting can be attributed to opportunity, quality, looks, improvement of skill, change of scenery? Is there a reason we can believe he can keep this up, says Kyle? I think it's a little bit of a lot of things. I think he's playing free. I think he's playing unburdened. I think being the fifth pick of the draft and all the things were going on in Minnesota and the changes of coaching and all those, I think that is good. I think Igor Kokoschkov, who's working with him, is very good. And I think that the last thing I would say is I think that he I do think he's playing unburdened, just also from a coaching standpoint. I think Quinn's freed him up. So are those things, is it replicable? To some extent, it's a huge jump, I would say. Statistically, what he's doing right now is a jump that's a little bit beyond, at least in the recent games, it's a little bit beyond something that's natural. You don't usually have players who in their seventh year of their career jump from a career 37% shooter to 44, a career 32% three-point shooter to 37. That seems unnatural. So ignoring that he's our guy and I'm rooting for him and I want it to be true, just if you were to show me this career of 36%, 36%, 38%, 36%, 37%, with a jump to 40, so you have an upward trend. I mean, if you look at his last 2 years, he's up 18%, he's up 1.8%, and then he's up 3.whatever%. I think there's some signs there that – sorry, my scout just texted me for an interview. I think there's a sign there, but that jump's pretty big, right? So he's gone from 26% three-point shooting to 33 to 31 to 37. So I'm optimistic just because of all the other things, but there's a level of reality I think we need to have there a little bit. It was great to see Jarebko out there playing. Is there a certain reason if you know of why he wasn't playing until now? Yeah, Udo beat him out. Udo beat him out for time, and Udo was playing great. Why are guards lobbing to Rudy as much as last year? Why aren't they? I thought Rubio was going to make Rudy even more than last season. Yeah, I think defenses are taking it away. Remember, defenses have a part of this too. We can't just go run whatever we want to run every single time down the court. This is from Michael Van Orden. I think that defenses are collapsing in on Rudy, and so if you listen to the coach's show last night with Quinn, Quinn talks about the fact that, you know, why do we keep getting so many corner threes? Well, we get corner threes because of the fact that Rudy, the teams are taking Rudy's role away, and to take Rudy's role away usually takes a third person. The other thing, the reason Ricky Rubio's getting open looks is they're taking Rudy's role away. So they run the pick and roll, and the big stays on Rudy and won't let him get to the rim because a dunk is the number one shot in the game, and so that leaves Rubio open for a mid-range jumper, and he's taking it. Like, these are all intertwined a little bit. But the Jazz right now take the third most amount of corner threes of any team in the league, 10.2% of their shots. Well, that's because of the role. So, you know, sometimes I think rather than looking like, where's Rudy, when we get a corner three, ask yourself, did Rudy create that corner three? And more often the answer is yes. Mitchell's rookie years reminded me of Ben Gordon's rookie year in Chicago. Do you see similarities between those two? Could Mitchell win sixth man of the year as a rookie? It's an interesting comp. I go with Eric Gordon is the comp that I look at more often. I hope he's not Ben Gordon, because Ben Gordon's career kind of fizzled after that. Let me take a look at Ben Gordon. I only have active players up. Give me one second. Eric Gordon, by the way, I'll go to what I spent. Rookie year was 16% from 16 points a game, seventh pick of the draft. He 46% from the field, 39% from three. I mean, he had a great, great rookie year. Turned it over twice a game, had three rebounds, three assists. I thought, That's the comp that I've actually had on this whole time on Donovan Mitchell's Eric Gordon. And, you know, if you look at Eric Gordon's first eight games of his NBA career, which is where Donovan is right now, you end up with... Scout's so funny, texting me back, 908. Eric Gordon in his opening eight games shot 10 of 29 from the field and averaged 3.9 points a game. So this is a better start to his career than Eric Gordon. Ben Gordon did win Rookie of the Year. On a bad team, he averaged 15, or won six man. He averaged 41 from the field, 40 from three, 15 points a game. Probably not a bad comp. I guess he averaged 21 points a game 2 years later. He always was on kind of bad teams in Chicago. That's not a bad comp. Third pick of the draft, small, undersized, really was able to score it. That's not a bad comp. His opening eight games of his NBA career, I think he spent 2 years at UConn, but I'm not sure. He's interesting. He's out of London. The opening eight games of Ben Gordon's career were 9 points a game, 33% shooting, and 29% from three. There's some cool stuff going on here. Let's continue and grab one or two more questions before we wrap this one up. Great questions today. Cameron Christensen, I'm trying to stay grounded on Donovan, but is he going to be a stud? That being said, are there other high-level players that never learned how to jump off 1 foot? Let's watch his rim finishing and what he's able to learn, how he's learned. Able to learn under to finish around the rim. That'll be a huge sign of where his career is going. He's a stud. He's got a confidence and a fearlessness to who he is that is special. I think his upbringing is unique. He grew up with a dad that had been a professional athlete but never made the big leagues, a mom that was a school teacher. He went to one of the elite private schools in the country and was raised in that environment. He's just very mature. He's very worldly. I don't think he's scared of much. It's It's impressive. Is Dennis Lindsay a wizard or what? Rubio for a late first rounder, Mitchell for a non-rotation player. How does he get these deals done? They look good right now. Is Ricky's decrease in assists and increase in shooting make him more valuable or equal in the value compared to last season? If he shoots well, it's more valuable to shoot than it is to give assists, I think. It's a good question, though. From Braxton, Jazz management has said that they think Rubio can be Jason Kidd. Is what Rubio doing right now similar to the jump Kidd took? I've never loved this comparison. I know Dennis did it. And Dennis knows a lot more than I do. I just think it's, I mean, that's a Hall of Famer. Like, that's an all-timer. And so I'm uncomfortable with that. But what he's talking about is that Kidd went 38%, 31%, and then went to Phoenix and went 41%, and then he went 44%. His three-point shooting went 27, 36, and then his three-point shooting jumped to 37, but it stayed down for a while before it got to 40 in Dallas. I don't know. Jason Kidd, man. Woo! Jason Kidd's a beast. Let's take one more. Any chance to see an all-star game in Utah anytime soon? I doubt it. But there's a lot of other people have renovated their arenas too. I think it'd be hard to get it back. Maybe. Do you think the offense has to do with confidence? There a difference between AB and Mitchell? Because I see similar games. Burks would score 20 when he first came to the team. Here's my frustration. Mitchell plays offense like AB used to be. AB was told he was out of control, so AB has changed his game, is more timid. When we have a team without driving, how come AB is the only one who gets punished for his offense? I don't really have an answer for you, Brandon, other than I just don't think your view is accurate. So, I mean, that's not a great answer for you. Like, I'm just saying, oh, you're wrong. Like, but I don't really have an answer for you other than that. Like, I don't know. I took a lot of heat once when I said that I thought, you know, AB might not have a career as good as Randy Foy, and people went bananas. And I might be right. I mean, I don't think they're comparable players right now. Do you see a scenario where we trade Hood? If so, what will we get in return? I don't. I think we're very invested in Rodney. I think we believe in Rodney. I think maybe as the year goes on and the burden of trying to be the lead dog goes away, he'll relax a little bit and have a better year. I don't see a scenario where we trade Rodney. I think his off-season market will be a little funky, and there's a chance he's comfortable here and comes back. So I think there could be a really good three-guard Rodney Hood, Donovan Mitchell, Ricky Rubio group that's being collected here, and then if we could find a bona fide wing scorer that goes with it, you really have something pretty terrific. Cleveland, I think there's something. I'm in the book that there's something wrong with Cleveland. Gerald Adams Davis is asking. I think there's something wrong with Cleveland. I think they lost a good player and added bad players, and I think they're not very good. And I don't think they're necessarily coming out of this. I could be wrong, but I'm in the school. I think there's something wrong with Cleveland. I could be wrong. Zach Campbell says, last night, ref number 30, John Goebel. I thought he had a bad game last night. He's a good ref, too. I thought he had a bad game. Called a blocking foul on Ingles. Ingles had a dirty look when he asked Joe. Gave him a dirty look when Joe asked about it. Both Quinn and Joe talked to him at the start of the break. Then Goebel went and wrote something down at the scorer's table immediately after that. Any idea what the notes? The refs always keep notes down of plays and what time they happened. And often they'll talk that back to Sakakis. And when they go in at halftime, they'll get a clip. They'll spend halftime watching film of four or five plays that they mark down. During breaks, they'll go and tell the guy who's watching for the instant replay center, hey, I want these plays, I want these cuts. And so they'll often have that, which is pretty interesting. All right, that is today's edition of Locked on Jazz Facebook Live, brought to you by Grip 6 Belts. LOCK20 is your promo code at grip6.com, as well as by the Advocates, UtahAdvocates.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate you. Will, I might try to write something up. I never have time to do that. Never mind. Why do I keep saying that? I always have a vision I'll write something up. There's no chance. Have a great day. Talk to you soon.